Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's August the 2nd, 2012. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. This week, I must once again grovel at your feet in abject apology, because I'm going to have to do it to you again. The past 10 days have been fantastic. Groups of people literally trooping through the Puget Sound area, some coming from as far away as Europe to meet me and look the area over as a possible locality for their own immigration to the Northwest homeland. Now, I have been given a glimpse into how things should be. It ought to always be like this. There should be great numbers of white people flying and driving into the Northwest homeland from all over the continent and all over the world in order to prepare for their homecoming. I got an email today from yet another individual who wants to make his scouting trip in a few weeks' time. He found himself suddenly between jobs and felt that now was the time. Now, that having been said, the fact is that today we have people in the area who have come from the East Coast who are very seriously looking at relocating here where they are needed and where God and destiny want them to be, and not the least, where they can also be of help to me personally, so in the future I can actually free up some time for the creative stuff. Now, these comrades need to learn about employment in the Puget Sound area, housing, facilities, schools, and a wide variety of other things about their prospective new home. As with any move, things being the way they are with us, I have to be personally available to assist them during weekdays because our other local comrades all have jobs, which should tell you something right there about your economic prospects in this part of the homeland. It's also the end of the month, and I have a Northwest Observer that I have to get into the mail. And anyone who knows me can tell you that I'm really anal about never missing a deadline and always getting that magazine out on time. Guys, these people came all the way from the Atlantic to the Pacific, literally, to be here. And I have to be there for them. I can't just meet them for dinner and say, hi, bye, now piss off because I've got work to do. Can't do that. Between that and the Northwest Observer, the long and the short of it is that once more this week I'm going to have to fob you off with a rerun. Yes, I know. The situation with a capital S here has now reached the point where even the jewel in the NF's crown, Radio Free Northwest, is being affected by the corner cutting. This situation will be the subject of my next full Radio Free Northwest podcast next week for sure. Until then, however, again, with my profoundest apologies, I'm going to have to send you on a trip down memory lane.
Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night, many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's March 25th, 2010. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
There beside the singing river, that dark mass of men were seen, far above their shining weapons on their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune, and hurrah, my voice for freedom is the rising of the moon.
I'm going to begin this week's show with a subject I'm very reluctant to broach. I spent most of this weekend debating with myself over whether or not to speak of this in public at all. I know a number of my associates and our party supporters will disagree with my decision to do so, and I can understand their viewpoint. This is about the fifth time I've reworked this part of the show so as to convey to you folks, to the best of my ability, exactly what it is I want to say without simply adding to the confusion by going off into long, pointless digressions about things that happened 20 or 30 years ago where the majority of you won't have a clue as to what in the hell I'm talking about. Now, I'm referring to a systematic and growing campaign of defamation, slander, harassment, and abuse, which has been conducted against me personally and against the Northwest Migration Concept on the Internet for quite some time. Basically, our people are being stalked across the Internet. The minute they show up on any discussion board or in any comments section, all of a sudden, certain people start showing up as well, and they start acting like howler monkeys and trying to shout us down. These are not Jews, and they're not the left, and they're not the government or the SPLC. These are people who claim to be white nationalists, who more or less believe as we do. Now, in my view, the validity of that claim to be one of us is open to serious question, but when you come across this happy horse dung, which I'm sure you shall eventually judge for yourself. I call this hysterical campaign of abuse and vilification by several names in my own writings, Goo-Boo, Space Madness, but most often I call it the Goat Dance. I chose that name because one of the so-called white groups I criticized in the past that started all this taradiddle used to have a kind of ritual involving virtually nude young men wearing only jock straps with green leafy things stuffed in them, and the leader of the group presided over the festivities wearing a kind of a robe or a toga made out of a bedsheet, kind of a racist John Belushi. Now, they call this the Goat Dance, and since this took place on a rural estate, yes, there was a live goat involved. Don't ask. I understand why a lot of you feel I should be maintaining public silence on this mess. I've been told that I need to take the high road, that I should be a big man and rise above it all, that I shouldn't stoop to conquer, that I shouldn't dignify this defamatory drivel with an answer, and I get all that. I also understand that by responding, I am to a large degree giving these people what they want. Like all stalkers, what they want most of all is for the target of their weird desires and obsession to respond to them. To acknowledge their existence. They don't want this to be about the Northwest Migration, the Northwest Republic, or even about Harold Covington. They want it to be all about them. They're some pretty sick puppies. The reason that after much reflection I decided to include this segment in our podcast this week is because the fact is the decision has been taken out of my hands. The things I'm going to be talking about are already being discussed in public, by which I mean on the Internet, although perhaps bellowed and howled and cackled in public would be a better term for it. It's already out there whether we like it or not, and to new people who don't know what the hell's going on and who have nothing to guide them, it's weird and confusing, and they're coming to me wanting answers. At least once a week, I get an email from somebody asking me the question, "Harold, why does everybody in the movement talk bad about you and the Northwest Migration?" The first thing I do when I get these questions is I fire back another email in response saying, "Define everybody." Because the fact is that no, everybody, quote-unquote, does not badmouth me in the Northwest Migration. This bird-brained and pathological behavior is confined to five or six specific individuals who have made a career out of it. Their identities are known to me, including most of the false email addresses and internet sock puppets that they employ. I regret to say that one of these individuals is my own brother, but in his case, his motivations are personal, financial, and family-related, and have nothing to do with white nationalism or anything racial. So, not counting my brother, roughly 80-90% of the toxic waste which is circulating about me on movement internet boards and whatnot comes from about half a dozen specific known individuals, none of whom are acting out of any legitimate racial or political motive. The rest of it is just mindless repetition by silly people who don't know any better, but who just like gossip and scandal. They hear this stuff and they shoot it all over the internet just for shits and giggles. Now, someone once said that great minds talk about ideas, average minds talk about events, and little minds talk about people. We have an awful lot of little minds in the movement. The internet really facilitates this kind of childish tantrum. I mean, look at Lindsay Lohan and Twitter. One of the odd things I've noticed about this phenomenon down through the years is that any time I try to speak of white character in general terms, everyone nods sagely and agrees with me. But when I cite and analyze specific examples by name, a lot of people jam their fingers in their ears and shout, "La la 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 la, I'm not listening!" In our rather eccentric collective mindset, it seems to be okay to discuss our many moral and personal failings, so long as one does it in very broad terms, so whoever's listening can convince themselves that Harold isn't really talking about them. But the minute I start naming names and citing specific examples of disgraceful and counterproductive behavior, especially on the part of those who claim to be our leaders, all of a sudden I am quote-unquote fighting a feud. This is very much a shoot-the-messenger kind of thing, so don't worry, I won't upset anyone by naming names here. And in any case, I'm not really comfortable with perpetuating the names of these assholes in any connection at all to what I view as a sacred and holy cause. I'm an old hand at this. I have been subjected to this kind of gossip and abuse for well over 30 years now, dating back to the pre-internet days when we put our smears and slanders in little single-sheet newsletters run off on mimeograph machines in garages. Another one of my old movement mentors, Major William Gadke, who was the last head of the old America First Committee, the Lindbergh one, once warned me about this. He told me, quote, "Harold, the problem is that these people who are spreading lies and rumors about you are basically mediocrities. We are so used to mediocrity and incompetence in the movement that anything else makes us suspicious. Now, these people who slander you simply can't understand why anyone with your education and talent would devote themselves to this dinky little movement of ours instead of using your abilities to make all kinds of money, because that's what they would do themselves if they had your chops," end quote, or words to that effect. So yeah, they started laying this crap on me long ago, back in the days of yore. I have some real favorites from those days, especially the rumors where I was supposed to have magical powers, kind of like the Lord Voldemort in the Harry Potter series. I was supposed to have sacrificed my cat in a satanic ritual in the Nazi headquarters on North Street in Raleigh. And I'm also supposed to have sent poltergeist to haunt Michael Hoffman II. Wait, that's naming a name, isn't it? Ah, screw it. I was also supposed to be an alcoholic Indian. Plus, of course, there were the usual big three, Jew, Fed, and Queer. I still get called a Jew, of course, with no documentary proof at all, because there isn't any. In point of fact, my family line has been traced back to 1727 when a Scotch-Irish immigrant named John Covington landed in Charleston. That was actually done by the Raleigh News and Observer newspaper editor, a liberal named Claude Sitton, who hired a genealogist in 1980 to try and find Jewish ancestry in my family tree, but the genealogist came up dry. Nope, nothing but Germans and Ulstermen. I get called a Fed all the time as well, of course, again without one shred of evidence for the past 38 years. Queer, I'm glad to say they've pretty much left alone. It would be kind of hard since I'm the guy who sent Frank Cullen away for 7 years for that kind of thing. Everyone who has ever been prominent in the racial right has been subjected to this to one degree or another. This kind of dysfunctional behavior seems to be part and parcel of the kind of personalities that are attracted to the movement. Now, some people say that if you just ignore this nutty personal stuff, it goes away. Unfortunately, in my experience, that's not true. If you just ignore it, people assume you don't answer it because you can't answer it. Now, my policy, when one of these moronic allegations pops up, has always been to make one definitive statement per rumor or accusation, and afterwards refer anyone who requires to that statement as kind of a canned answer. I haven't bothered to do that for many years now, and that may be one reason why all the toxic waste has been building up, so this podcast is going to have to constitute my canned answer for a while. Now, as to why they do this nonsense. Lord, Lord, where to begin, where to begin? First off, I'm sure it is no news to most of you that our movement has a lot of people associated with it who have no business within 100 miles of any kind of alternative politics. We have serious character issues, and since those character issues are largely what have been preventing us over the past 50 years from mounting an effective resistance to the crisis in our civilization, I have in the past refused to be polite and look the other way. I tend to say out loud what has to be said and let the chips fall where they may. I hold up mirrors, and a lot of people don't like what they see. So that's one reason some of these people are giving me all this crap on the internet. In the past, I caught them with their fingers in the cookie jar, or I caught them with their pants down, in one case quite literally, and I let everybody know it. Secondly, as the late Dr. William Pierce once put it to me in the last civil letter he ever addressed to me, he said, "The problem is, Harold, we're all chasing the same buck." Bluntly put, a lot of the anti-Covington mess originates either directly or indirectly from certain fearless leaders who don't appreciate even my limited competition for that same buck. I think a little research will reveal that a large part of the somewhat misnamed movement infighting over the past 50 years between all manner of personalities and groups on the right has its roots in competition for the donation dollar. How we've been afflicted for many years with so-called leaders who view this sacred and holy cause as a business and who use gangster-like tactics to steal supporters for themselves and undermine the support of other groups and so-called leaders. Now, this kind of thing has been standard in the movement since Colonel Sims and the Second Empire Klan in the 1920s. Third, a lot of these people who are doing this are simply insane. The internet has allowed too many people to get in touch with their inner nut, and when some of us sit down behind the computer keyboard, we get a visit from Mr. Hyde. I know because I'm susceptible to this myself, and I can see that there have been times when I've let the badger loose to howl at the moon, if you'll pardon my mixed metaphor, so I know whereof I speak. Now, if you will peruse some of these internet attacks on me, you'll notice that most of them read like they were written by Beavis and Butthead or the characters on South Park, but they weren't. Believe it or not, the overwhelming majority of this childish twaddle is written and circulated by middle-aged men in their 40s and 50s, whom you would think would have by now outgrown adolescent toilet humor and nya-nya-nya. It always astounds me, the sheer childishness of some of this stuff, and the fact that it comes from men with gray hair in their heads. You'd think that these men would be able at least to show a little bit of dignity while they were lying about me, but apparently for them, the internet seems to serve as some kind of sick fountain of youth, or perhaps I should say fountain of childishness. Finally, as self-absorbed and conspiracy theoretical as this sounds, in the case of one major goat dancer, I genuinely believe this man to be wearing more than one hat and to be acting on an ulterior agenda. I don't know for certain. At the end of the day, he may be just a kook, but if he is, there's method in his madness. He has demonstrated a remarkably consistent, persistent, and determined pattern of destructive behavior over the past 23 years for a mere loon. Ever since 1987, this man has gone where the action is, and all of a sudden, that's where the action isn't. He has built up an impressive body count of white racial organizations that he has destroyed or seriously damaged, including inflicting some middling serious damage on the Pat Buchanan campaign in 2000 and the Ron Paul campaign in 2008. I know, I totally get the irony of my spending several past podcasts telling you all about how you shouldn't be giving in to paranoia, and now I seem to be indulging in it myself, but I never said the threat wasn't real. I said we mustn't let it prevent us from functioning. Remember, just because you're paranoid, that don't mean they ain't out to get you. Paranoids have enemies, too. You have to bear in mind that most of these specific teapot tempests that they rant and rave about on the internet are decades old. Crap going back to things I said and did and wrote in the late 1970s in some cases. Now, I have often wondered why none of it ever seems to die down. Why someone always seems to go to great effort, stirring it up again every couple of years, especially whenever it looks like the Northwest idea is starting to gain momentum and we're starting to get some people in and get some things done, like now, for instance. I don't think this latest resurgence of horse manure on the internet is coincidental. We're starting to move forward, and I think somebody doesn't like it. One thing I will address specifically is that I allegedly wrote this History of the White Nationalist Movement that has all manner of unkind things to say about certain individuals in our past. The document referred to has been floating around the internet for something like 4 years now, and I believe that there are also hard copies in circulation that people have run off on their printers as well. It's a roughly 30,000-word monograph or pamphlet entitled A Brief History of the White Nationalist Movement. Now, in point of fact, no, I did not write the brief history, at least not all of it and not for that purpose. What happened is that somebody came along and plagiarized, collected, and collated a number of articles and bits and pieces from the past 50 years on movement internal matters in history and melded them all together in a single report or long article. Now, some of that borrowed material is mine, yes, such as the Huey Long segment, the bulk of the section on Glenn Miller, and a good bit of the material on Benny Clausen, although not all of it. And here I go naming names again. Oops. But the brief history also contains sections which were either written or paraphrased from works by Bill White, Louis Beam, the late Rick Cooper, Dr. Edward Fields, the late David McCaldon, the writer known as McGuire, and a number of other writers and commentators. However, I will say this. Whoever wrote the brief history, they sure know their movement beeswax. While, to be sure, some of it is opinion and editorializing, I have not been able to find a single factual inaccuracy anywhere in the report. A quick interjection here from the year 2012, if I may. This statement of mine 2.5 years ago is, in fact, incorrect. There was one factual error in the brief history of the White Nationalist Movement, which I spotted later on, and that is that the anonymous compiler of the report referred to the late revisionist historian Bradley Smith, when Bradley Smith is in fact still alive. Other than that, the whole document is spot on. I think that's another thing that's driving the goat dancers nuts. They can't refute anything in the report factually, so they scream, HAC wrote it, HAC wrote it, in order to make it all about me and to distract people from what the document actually says. Now, the hell of it is, the brief history is not, in fact, all that pro-Covington or pro-Northwest. The author, whoever he is, makes it clear that he is not a supporter of mine or of the Northwest migration, and that he thinks I'm foolishly wasting my time. Now, some people ask me, how do we know who to believe? Well, I can't make that decision for you. Look at my work, look at my life, look at the people who are saying these things and what motivates them. Look at what they've contributed, if anything, to the movement. Look at the world around you and wonder why we have gotten nowhere in our efforts to resist. So what can I tell you? Now, if you've read my novels, everything I have to say is in there. That's it, people. That's me. Now, after this podcast hits the site, there will probably be some responses to the effect that, except for the brief history document, I did not answer specific charges. And that's quite correct. I didn't. And I have no intention of doing so and wallowing in the mud with these people. I didn't because most of their specific charges against me are simply deranged nonsense. And if I were to repeat them in order to refute them, then I would be perpetuating them, which is part of the plan behind trying to get me to respond to all this. It's the old thing about, hey, Senator, have you stopped beating your wife? And the senator replies, but I never beat my wife. And then next day the headline comes out, Senator denies wife-beating charge. Now, many of you guys listening to this still probably have no idea what on earth I'm talking about, and that's good. You're not missing anything, believe me. Now, chances are you will eventually run across this excrement on the internet on your own, and when you do, just remember what I said here. However, in order to refute the charge that I am only presenting one side of the story here, I've decided that I will give my critics and my enemies some brief little time of their own on this podcast so that you can hear their case against Harold Covington in their own words and from their own lips.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I'd go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed, you laughed, and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. I cooked your food. I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Huh? Well, you just wait. They'll find you yet, and when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in...
People, I'm sorry. So much for my comments about middle-aged men showing dignity, but that was just too much to resist. I've been looking for an excuse to play that one since these podcasts started, and the goat dancers finally gave me an excuse. But you see what I mean about the internet making us childish? It's just so much fun to play with these machines every now and then. But at least I understand the fact, when I'm yielding to my inner child or whatever on here, that It's not what these things should be used for. These machines are a great gift, our only equal means of communication, and I just think it's shameful that they're being abused like this by these other people. These idiots honestly don't seem to realize how what they're doing looks to other people. They have no sense of shame. Anyway, enough of that. Having wallowed in the mud for the first part of this podcast, for the rest of it, I will see what I can do to try and raise the tone a bit. Now, if I may be allowed to go from the ridiculous to the sublime here, one of the most popular and hard-hitting articles I ever wrote, and one that may well yet get me arrested one day, is entitled Time to Talk Treason. It goes something like this. In Ireland, when a man has an old friend over for dinner, after the meal is over, he'll generally tell his wife the traditional Irish tale, Love, Seamus and I are going down to the pub to talk a little treason. I think that comes from Brendan Behan. Oh, hell, let's come right out and say it. Us white boys need to be talking a little treason. I noticed that the great state of Oregon is about to pass more grotesque hate crime laws in favor of sodomites, making perverts who commit the filthiest acts imaginable. People don't seem to realize what it is that homosexuals actually do. Anyway, it's going to make these pervs a politically and legally protected class. Better than me in the eyes of the law. Better than any white man who likes girls. Because they will have specific legal protections that we are denied. There is no more equality under the law. Some states are even worse. In Idaho, all women, period, are considered a special politically and legally protected class under these deranged hate crime laws, effectively meaning that only heterosexual white males are without legal protection against so-called hate, and only white males can be victimized only on the lowest level as mere Americans. Less than a woman of their own race, less than a Mexican, less than a faggot, less than a black. Three-fifths of a man at best. I'm going to say something now to all my fellow girl-loving honkies, and I'm dead serious. I think we need to start re-evaluating our relationship with the United States of America with a view towards bringing that relationship to an end. America gives us nothing except ridicule, hatred, contempt, and oppression. America ignores our interests, laughs at us and reviles us, picks our pockets, discriminates against us with affirmative action and racial quotas, and kicks us in the teeth when we try to protest or petition for the redress of just grievances. America rigs the electoral process so that no one without $10 million in the bank should even think about running for office, and so that only criminals, incompetents, and mentally unbalanced mediocrities can win. America passes laws that give foreigners who are in our country illegally and perverts who literally wallow in their own filth during sexual acts a preferred and privileged status over us. Every time we turn on the television, we see grinning black and brown monkey faces mocking and reviling us, mincing faggots waving their limp wrists mocking and reviling us, toilet-mouthed Jews like the loathsome Sarah Silverman spewing hatred and abuse at us, pathological liars in the White House and Congress pissing down our back and assuring us with solemn faces that it's raining. Thanks to the media and the Jews who control the media, when the world thinks of white males, they think of revolting cartoon characters. George Washington, Daniel Boone, and Charles Lindbergh have been replaced by Homer Simpson and Peter Griffin. White women are in their own way just as much victims as white men are, although some of them haven't quite seen sufficiently through the feminist horseshit to understand that. If we can ever succeed in deprogramming our sisters and making them understand what's been done to them so that they realize that their place is by their menfolk's side and not with the Jews who hate them and hold them in as much contempt as they do white men, calling them shixes and so forth, well, if we can ever succeed in doing that, you kikes had better start running. White people do the real work in this country. Mexicans and blacks do nothing that couldn't be done twice as well and at half the cost by a good cart horse. Robotics will eventually make the black man and the brown man completely obsolete. White people pay the overwhelming percentage of taxes that finance the grand guignol horror show that is America. White boys and increasingly girls are dragged into the military and come back from the Jews' foreign wars with their bodies mangled to rot in filthy army hospitals like Walter Reed because the influx of illegal aliens has taken all the entry-level jobs in their hometowns and there's no future for white kids where they grew up. White people, especially boys, are denied access to college education, to employment, to workplace promotion and job stability because of their skin color, because of their gender, and increasingly because of their age. I could go on and on, but if you're white, you know what I'm talking about, and if you're not white, I'm not talking to you anyway. Guys and gals, let me ask you something. What the hell do we owe a society that treats us like this? The neocons wave their red, white, and blue Masonic dish rags and babble about all this freedom we've got. Bullshit! What freedom? the freedom to never be able to get any kind of decent career because you're the wrong color and you've got convex genitalia, the freedom not to be admitted to college because their quota for white boys was filled by the sons of the wealthy elite long before you even applied, the freedom to spend 30 years in the workforce and see incompetent affirmative action niggers and Mexicans and women promoted over your head year after year. What freedom? The freedom to pay one-third of your income to support stupid wars in the Middle East to protect the Jews from the consequences of their own behavior. The freedom to vote in elections where half the time these arrogant swine no longer bother to conceal the massive fraud. What freedom? The freedom to have your children corrupted by the endless tsunami of filth from the television screen and taught sodomy techniques in school. The freedom to have your son and your daughter come back from Iraq in a plastic bag, or minus some limbs because all of the jobs in their hometown have been gobbled up by illegals and the military was the only place they could get a paycheck. What freedom? The freedom to be insulted, belittled, and spat upon every time we turn on a TV or pick up a newspaper. The freedom to be eventually carried off into the living hell of some state-run nursing home when the government finally finds some way to steal the Social Security and Medicare fund and piss it away in the deserts of Iraq or blow it on the stock market. What the hell kind of loyalty do we owe to a government that has made us third-class citizens? What the hell kind of loyalty do we owe to a state that uses us like toilet paper and throws us away? Why, exactly, should we respect the rights of media garbage people who give us nothing but insults, contempt, and vilification? Why, exactly, should we allow our country to be taken over by millions of Mexican mestizos and all the overflow from the Third World's sewers and never raise a hand in our own defense because the tyrant's law forbids it? Yes, yes, I know the United States of America is the law. Of course it is. Tyrants always are the law. That's why they're tyrants and not simple gangsters. The difference between Barack Hussein Obama and John Gotti is only a technicality, except that Gotti dressed better and he killed a lot fewer people. When the law is cruel and uncaring, when the law is vicious, when the law is oppression wrapped up in paper and forced down the throats of the powerless, the coerced, and the cowed, when the law is enforced by steroid-popping bullies with badges and jackals with briefcases and reptiles in black robes who use it solely to maintain their own power over other human beings and squeeze them dry of every last wretched penny they possess, when the law is being used to do you and your family harm, then you are under no obligation to obey it. In every society, there is a social contract that cuts both ways, and today in America, the social contract has been broken. The United States Constitution was an attempt to create such a contract, and until 1861, it worked. But we need to be very clear on this. The white American has upheld that contract and is even now upholding it as the blood of our young men is spilled in the Iraqi and Afghanistan deserts. It is the federal government of the United States and the squamous alien things who have stolen it away from us, who have violated that social contract again and again and again over the past century. Like an abused wife, white Americans have put up with it all, from our cheating, lying, thieving, murdering government. The beatings, the drinking up the rent money, the lipstick on the collar, the constant bullying and browbeating. But even the most abused spouse eventually decides it's time for a divorce. That time has come. Enough. Screw the United States government, screw democracy, screw America. We have seen enough, we've had enough, and we want out. Yeah, I know. Our ancestors tried this in 1861. Well, it's time for a rematch. Here in the Northwest and any place else where white males are tired of being treated like dogs and finally decide to show the Jews that dogs have teeth. And you know something? I think if we ever do pull off the old Macbeth trick and screw our courage to the sticking point, I suspect the world will discover that as far as the baby shit brown Barack Hussein Obama goes, well, he damn sure ain't no Abraham Lincoln.
Calling all the clans together. Calling all the clans together. Calling all the clans together. Brothers, come around. Calling south and north together, calling west and east together, calling all the clan together, brother, come brother. can't afford to be a bit of sleeping. Can't you see the reaper leaping? Brothers come a running. Never mind the shells are flying. Never mind the day that's shining. Can't you hear the piper piping? Brother, come a running. Come running fast, come running hard, running for all you worth. Come running to the gates of hell itself and let the devil take the hindmost. We're gonna be calling on a clan together, calling on a clan together, calling on a clan together.
We are poised on the brink of a historic moment in our people's history, and I think it is right that we pause here for a bit of a recap and reflection to remember who we are, where we came from, and the mission which guides us in this life. Sometimes, what with podcasts and deadlines and software problems and whatnot, we get so up to our ass in alligators, as the saying goes, that we forget that our original objective was to drain the swamp. We are not conservatives. We don't want to conserve anything about this corrupt and genocidal world we live in. Our founding fathers, far-seeing and deeply honorable though they were men of the 18th century. In their day, they couldn't recognize the overriding importance that race would assume on this continent. We are men of the 21st century, the century in which geopolitics will be replaced by biopolitics, the politics of race. Our object is to transform society from top to bottom in every way, socially, economically, politically, and spiritually. We are going to create a new nation on the face of the earth, which will not only secure the existence of our people and a future for white children, but which will someday, in a far distant future, lead to the ultimate expression of human achievement, the Aryan Imperium, wherein the white man will once again resume his rightful dominion over this planet and everything it contains, and then spread that imperium to the stars. We don't just aim to win a few states in the Northwest. We aim to win the universe. No, that's not a joke. 1,000 years from now, white men will be walking not just the lands of the Pacific Northwest, but under the terraformed skies of Mars and under the light of 100 alien suns from Alpha Centauri on out. Yes, quite serious, I assure you. Getting back to the here and now, I must make something very clear. The coming revolution of which I speak will not be won at the ballot box, and I'm frankly amazed that there's still anyone who thinks that it's possible to vote all our troubles away. All I can do is remind such people what Boss Tweed of New York once said when some do-gooder was complaining to him about his corrupt administration. And Boss Tweed says, "So long as I count the votes, there ain't a damn thing you can do about it." Our revolution will at some time in the future be brought about in a political vacuum which will result from the complete collapse of the existing order. There will be no question of our revolution breaking the law. When our time comes, there will be no law left to break. And the framework in which we will fight will be the simple one of life or death. Everyone who is associated with us needs to bear in mind that we are headed not for some grand and glorious election Tuesday night in November. We are headed for Lebanon and Yugoslavia. It will eventually be forced on us. We passed the point of no return a long time ago. The only question is, will the white man survive and be able to crawl out of the rubble? Everything we do must always have that one goal in mind, to prepare the white man for the time when finally, at long last, we are able to do what must be done. If you can't deal with that, you're in the wrong outfit. Nervous Nellies need not apply to the Northwest Front. You're also in the wrong outfit if you cannot accept and understand that we white people are a persecuted minority and that we have no rights. The rules do not apply to us. We are the last group of people who may be legally persecuted, defamed, insulted, dismissed from employment, denied housing, denied medical care, assaulted and framed on fabricated legal charges, harassed in 1,000 ways, imprisoned without trial, and even murdered. And society will not only do nothing whatsoever to punish the perpetrators of these acts, but will applaud them. I get very disturbed when I hear someone who is ostensibly a racial nationalist babble about, "They can't do that because it violates our rights." Holy moly, I wonder, what planet have these people been living on for the past 20 years? Because we have no rights, because the rules do not apply to us, it is therefore worse than futile for us to act as though we were some kind of Rotary Club, to try to organize as if we were Republicans. Some people still can't understand why we cannot have members, why I cannot allow such a thing as a membership list to exist. They don't understand that someday the thugs in the black body armor will be kicking in their doors, killing their dogs, spraying their children with pepper spray, jamming automatic weapons in their faces, and dragging them away out of a home they will never see again into the hell of this nation's horrific prison system for the crime of dissent. The power structure will come to recognize us as revolutionaries and act accordingly. We had best recognize ourselves for what we are if we want to survive. You see, unlike the left, unlike the Black Panthers or street corner Reds or environmental lunatics or feminist bitches or militant sodomites, we are a genuine threat to the established order. The power structure is acutely aware of the fact that we are the real dissent in this sick and corrupt society. Knowing the movement as I do, I'm always stunned at how much the established authorities overrate our potential and how much we consistently underrate ourselves. The people in power have sense enough to be afraid of us, afraid enough to frame us and murder us and harass us. When will we come to understand our own strength, our own possibilities? So, why do we do it? We must be nuts. It's like Don Quixote tilting at windmills. Why would any sane person knowingly and willingly embrace a way of life which entails poverty, pain, pitiless persecution, and total alienation from what is loosely called normal society? I'll tell you why. We do it because we are better men than they are. We do it because, unlike the morally denatured rodents and reptiles who control so-called normal society, we are capable of making moral decisions and living moral lives. That is a character trait which has all but vanished among white Americans. There is a natural instinct of decency along with a natural instinct of survival in the Aryan. In us, among all the pale-faced crowd, these instincts are the least atrophied. We resist because there is something in us which simply will not accept the fact that we are being forced to live in a moral and racial sewer. There's some atavistic strain in our makeup which will not allow us to accept the filthy, liberal, politically correct world around us as inevitable and unavoidable. We resist because we alone still have some dim racial memory of what it is like to live in a clean and sane world, what it's like to be free men. In a shipwreck, we are the ones who never give up treading water and grabbing onto anything that floats, no matter how freezing the water or how tired we become, so that while others give up and drown, we are eventually rescued. We do what we do not because we expect any reward, not because we expect to see the day of victory, although I believe now that some of us might. I didn't always believe that. We do not do what we do because we seek power for its own sake. If we wanted power, there are infinitely easier ways to obtain it by working through the established system. We do what we do because it is right. No other reason. Because it is our duty to live as moral men and to fulfill our obligations to ourselves, to our people, and to our Creator. And that is why we will win, and the diseased apes who now slobber and howl in triumph over us will eventually squeal and bleed and die, because they do what they do only to feed their own greed and ego and hatred. They have no higher purpose other than their own wretched existences. We have the highest purpose of all. Now, it is true that we seem to be up against a stone wall. But if you'll pardon me for paraphrasing Lenin, it is a rotten wall, and a few good kicks will knock it down. I think that's one of the things I always have the most difficulty in conveying successfully to you folks, my utterly irrepressible sense of optimism and hope and faith in the eventual victory of our cause. This is Saga.
Free. But God. comes to me. His cradle is closing his eyes, and the blossom embraces the bee. But soon sets the whisper, arise, arise, tomorrow belongs to me. Children have been waiting to see. The morning will come when the world is mine. Tomorrow belongs to me.
During the long Greensboro trial of 1979 through 1980, a reporter once asked me one of the few sensible questions ever posed to me by an establishment journalist. She asked me, "What does it mean to be a Nazi? I don't mean Hitler and World War II and the racial thing and all that. What does it mean in human terms to be you, to believe as you do?" I thought about it a moment, and I replied, "To be a National Socialist means to take on yourself the sins of history. In the course of life and events, there are times when certain things have to be done. You don't debate or brood or agonize over these things, and you don't try to justify them because they can't be justified. You just do what has to be done so that those who come after you don't have to do it. National Socialists are people who understand this duty and who voluntarily take up this burden. Because you have taken up that burden of history, even to the extent of subscribing to Northwest Observer and sending in the odd 10 or 20 bucks at fund appeal time, you are head and shoulders above that jackass boss of yours at work with his six-figure salary and his huge suburban mansion and his fleet of luxury automobiles. It doesn't matter if you don't have a college degree, although many of you do. It doesn't matter if you're a mechanic or a construction worker or a janitor in the so-called normal world. If you have the intelligence and the perception and the moral courage to serve the 14 words of David Lane, then you are better than those yellow dogs and all their money and their power. Of course, merely being better than they are is only the beginning of the battle. The hardest part is yet to come, when you must prove yourself better through your behavior, and that's where all too many of us fall down. Despite our good intentions, we are white Americans and not Germans or Afrikaners or even Russians. We are still the products of the materialistic, spiritually empty, sleazy, and putrid middle American ethos. Our energy levels are low and our attention spans are short. Entirely too often, we decide that a gesture in the general direction of doing right is enough, and having done our bit, we now get back to the TV and the cold brewski. One of the worst things that ever happened to us was that we allowed ourselves to be convinced that politics and government has nothing to do with us, especially since they're all a bunch of crooks anyway. The political process and government has become something to be avoided and evaded. We must start thinking of it as something to be seized and confronted and purged with fire and sword. If they really are all a bunch of crooks, and they are, then our response should come from the tar barrel, the feather sack, the long stout rope, and the smoking rifle. Therein lies our remedy, not in the ballot box, and certainly not in pretending that the problem doesn't exist. How did we ever get the idea that anything which does not harm or hurt the people who are harming and hurting us would ever solve the problem? When did we become befogged with the notion that somehow there can be justice and correction without the punishment of those who have done evil? How can we possibly be so foolish as to think that there's some way to solve all this, which involves no risk, not even any real inconvenience to ourselves? Sorry, I'm wandering again. It's not enough only to believe. You have to act. And yet that is what white men have been conditioned from birth not to do. We have been carefully taught to avoid taking any real action which would injure the enemy, cause him disruption or damage, or in any way destabilize the status quo. Remember, the purpose of democracy is to prevent change. Now, this is why we need a party like the Northwest Front, because the white man no longer has the organic natural will within him to resist, at least not in sufficient numbers and not in the right way. All his instincts are for resistance, but he doesn't know how to express them. He understands instinctively that things aren't right, but he lacks the knowledge of why, especially knowledge of the all-important Jewish question. Now, we must not so much lead the white man as teach him, help him remember things that he knows instinctively but he's been forced by liberal life to suppress. Today we have no leadership cadre for our folk. Our natural elite has been destroyed or suborned or bribed, rendered impotent and irrelevant. Now we must build from the ground up a whole new racial leadership of the kind which up until about a century ago occurred naturally and organically within white society. We must reinvent ourselves as men and also as political men. We must recover what our ancestors called civitas, the concept of civic duty, which led men of substance and personal stature to assume what was for them literally the burden of unpaid public office. We must recover a sense of community as expressed in the political and civic ideal. Middle-aged white males shouldn't be sitting in front of television sets, clutching cold beers and staring at niggers playing with a ball. In a healthy and organic society, middle-aged white men in the prime of life should be leading and guiding their communities and providing examples and role models for future generations. That's how it was up until about 100 years ago, and that is how it will be again under the Northwest American Republic. You've heard the old cliche about how a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Like most cliches, it is in fact quite correct. You know what you should do in relation to the party, in relation to the whole way you live your life. Now I want you to be men and to act on what you know perfectly well to be right. Stop worrying, stop cavilling, stop equivocating, stop yes-budding, stop belly-aching, and just do it. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington, 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sascha Andenbaum. Freedom.